Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Play that Spanish radio call of the game winner. I might play that all day long. The Russians didn't get it with quite the same emotion. I do think it's cultural. Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. He's all over everything when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to basketball, when it comes to football. He's joining us now, and he has his son who celebrated a birthday over the weekend. How do you celebrate a birthday these days, father-son style?
It was his idea. He asked if he could skip the last part of school and go play 18 holes for the first time in his life. He turned 10, and I was like, hey, he wants to go play golf. It's 70 degrees. I'm for it. I don't care if he's going to miss 45 minutes of school. So that's how we did it.
How'd you play?
I actually played pretty well. He played, I had actually start playing, taking it pretty seriously because he was one over par for the first three holes and then had a par on the fourth hole and I think a bogey or double bogey on the fifth. And it was like, oh boy, he's playing pretty good. And I'm about a bogey golfer. So I had to crank it up a little bit.
Give us an idea.
Off even on birthdays.
Yeah, there you go. You're a good dad, first of all, Matt Prehm. That's why I want to start with that. But last week, Oregon, Tony Stubblefield, longtime Dana Altman assistant, been with the program for 10 years, is announced as DePaul's head coach. Good move for him personally. What and how does that affect Oregon's program moving forward, in your opinion?
Well, they have lost probably their most established recruiter on their staff. Mike Menenega, their other primary recruiter, is well-connected. And I would expect he gets bumped up to Stubbs' role. He'll do a good job there. But, Stubbs was huge early on in opening the door for Oregon into some areas of recruiting, some programs from AAU programs from recruiting that Oregon just didn't have the cachet at the time to be involved in. And then towards the end of his run at Oregon, I mean, he played a huge part in signing Jordan Bell, Tyler Dorsey, Lewis King, Bol Bol. You go down the list, Will Richardson on this year's team. He is instrumental. Now, how do they replace him? I mean, like I said, Menega is well-connected. He brought in Boucher. He brought in Dylan Brooks. He helped bring in Francis Okoro. He's signed Frank Kepnog and Fale Dante. They've got another, elite recruiter on their staff. And I think that's what was so good about Dana Altman's staff the last few years is they have two number ones. But Stubblefield is going to be a big loss, and they're going to have to go out and find somebody that, quite honestly, to get Stubblefield to do what he did is pretty rare. He was traveling at a normal period of time. Every third or fourth day, he was going somewhere when it was allowed to check out recruits, to make visits, to go watch AAU tournaments, to watch high school games. He was all over the country. And so they're going to need to find somebody that's got connections nationally, because this program now recruits nationally. They do a really good job internationally, so that's going to have to be another component there. And then you're going to have to find someone that's really got that hustler, that grind mentality, that's okay with being on the road all week, coming back home to Eugene for two games, and then going right back on the road again to go and recruit. It's a very long, tireless job. You're alone for long parts of your, of your work day and your work week. And you've got to know a whole bunch of people. Now, that was one of the biggest things with Stubbs, is he knew everybody in the college world.
It's interesting because prior to hiring Tony Stubblefield, DePaul had sort of zeroed in on Kenny Payne, another former Oregon assistant, who's also a very connected, good recruiter, and had helped on John Calipari's staff and an Ernie Kent staff back in the day at Oregon. It's clear that DePaul's going after a recruiter, and I don't think that's different than in college football, where you're seeing a lot of really good recruiters get head coaching jobs and then having to surround themselves with people who can do the X's and O's part. Is there any threat Tony Stubblefield pries away anybody else on the Oregon staff, or does he go off on his own?
I don't know if – I doubt McKenna would follow Tony to the ball. I mean, he's pretty established as Dana's right-hand man. He's really entrenched in the community. Same thing with Mike Menega. He's going to be elevated up to the primary recruiting role. He's going to be in charge basically of running the recruiting like Tony was. That's going to be a promotion for Mike. So I don't really know if there's any of those three assistants that follow with him to Paul. He'll probably have to go out and he'll want to hire somebody that's got some experience in the Midwest. I think I saw a report that he's keeping one of the staff members that was currently there on staff. Now, he could go out and hire some guys that have some former ties. He was on the staff with Brian Fish. Fish was on the original staff with Stubblefield when then Altman got hired. He is currently the ops director of player personnel for Georgia. He left Oregon to become the head coach at Montana State. That didn't work out. They parted ways, and he landed with Tom Crean at Georgia in an off-court coaching role. That would be a really good hire for Tony Stubblefield. Could be a hire for Oregon as well. Does Fish come back to Eugene? Maybe a Brandon Lincoln, a guy that coached under Fish at Montana State, was a GA at Oregon under Dana Altman when Stubblefield was here. He's currently a really successful high school coach in Southern California. Also a name Oregon could look at. If Stubblefield wants to, this is a deal where Oregon and DePaul could be looking at, if they want to keep it in the Oregon family, air quotes, they could be going after some of the same names. One thing I'm looking at is we're seeing this trend of NBA guys, right, coming to the college ranks, whether it's a player or a former coach. Former Oregon point guard Aaron Brooks is in the New York Knicks organization coaching in their G League team and working also with the main team, the Knicks, in some limited capacity. If I'm Dane Altman and if I'm Tony Stubblefield, I mean, I give Aaron Brooks a phone call and say, hey, do you want to coach the college ranks? Do you want to come back to Oregon? Do you want to come work with me at DePaul? He's highly regarded in the Seattle area, and that place is always producing players. And he's got connections to both programs or both coaches. So that could be a kind of off the beaten path if you want to stick within the Oregon program.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Before we pivot to football, I want to close the door on Oregon season. Sweet 16, we've sort of taken it for granted that Dana Altman's teams will play to that level or even better in some years. But I think a really nice season for Oregon, who had been a little up and down at different points. Certainly the Pac-12 helped itself in the tournament with UCLA and Oregon State and Oregon and USC playing deeper than others. What about the future, though, Matt? We've talked a little bit about this, or you and I have texted about it. Dana Altman's going big next year. They will be formidable, and they'll be tall. What, can you help our listeners understand what they'll look like next season?
Yeah, Oregon's team this past year was 6-6, across the board, essentially. Next year, I expect them to start two guys that are 6'11". It could be Infaladante and Frank Kepnog. It could be Frank Kepnog and Nathan Biddle. It could be Biddle and Infaladante. Don't really know, what one comes off the bench and what two start, but that's going to probably be their their front court. 2 6-foot-11 guys, man in the, you know, high low game, very similar to what we saw with the women's side, you know, with Sedona Prince and Nira Sabali, and how they were just able to, in the tournament, just abuse smaller teams. I expect that to play a factor for Oregon. They're going to be super active in the transfer portal. Chandler Lawson's departure opens up the need to go out and find, try and find another power forward guy. I think someone that's got the ability to play either power forward, small forward, or power forward center. Ideally, in Altman's system, you find someone like a Eugene Amarui or Elgin Cook or Dylan Brooks that can play all three. You know, can go super small at center, can go super big at small forward. They're going to be super active also for guards. That's going to be the probably the primary area that they'll focus on now for shooting guard. You got to replace Chris Duarte, who won the Jerry West Award, the top shooting guard in the country. And it's not just his scoring. His defense was terrific. So it's trying to find someone to pair with Will Richardson in the backcourt. I expect Eric Williams to probably go from playing more of a power forward role to more of a small forward perimeter role. You wonder, what does LJ Figueroa do? Does he come back and take advantage of what the NCAA said is the extra year? And then it's just kind of, you know, all the other pieces falling into place. They're going to be really big. They're still going to, you know, hammer home the versatility, having guys be able to play multiple positions, and they're going to need to add some shooting.
It's been fun to watch the Pac-12 conference. I think next season, I expect the Pac-12 to do some big things. Do you think
they have to capitalize?
Yeah. That's where I'm going. Do you think the Pac-12 does capture this momentum, or do we look back and go, "Gosh, what a lost opportunity"?
I think they will. I mean, just like we say in football, USC's got to be good in football, right, for the league to get their respect. And you know, this was kind of like all the stars align for the league, because you've had your most consistent team in the last 5 or 6 years, Oregon, make a run to the Sweet 16 and run into your own Pac-12 foe in USC. But then you have the other, you know, teams that make the tournament have success. Every team at least won one game. You know, Oregon State made a big run and caught a lot of people's attention with a national eye. Colorado had a win. You had USC's big run to the Elite Eight. But then your bluest of blue blood program, the UCLA Bruins, kind of catch fire, make the Final Four, and you have a legitimate argument to make where every guy on that team comes back. And, I mean, I think Johnny Juzang probably should go pro, much like Tyler Dorsey from when Oregon made the Final Four. He got incredibly hot. I think he scored the most points in UCLA history in 6 tournament games. You strike now if you're Johnny Juzang. Go now, go to the NBA, see what you can do. You're a former 5-star recruit. But even if he does leave, UCLA should be a top-10 team. They've got a 5-star, top-10 recruit coming in at power forward, so they're going to get some more help on the down low. Chris Smith could come back, their best player from this past season. Another one of their key forwards sat out for personal reasons, and maybe he returns, you know, next season. But I think the league is set up where UCLA will be a top-10 team, no doubt about it. Oregon will be in the top 25. It's hard right now to peg where they're at because their roster is not going to be done until May or June. You've got Oregon State, who could theoretically have everyone back, and I think even without them, they're going to be a possible top 25 team. If everyone comes back, they're a top 25, hands down. You've got an Arizona State team that's reloaded. They should have been a tournament team if it wasn't for multiple COVID pauses, and then USC should be a top 25 team as well. So you've got multiple teams that are in that level. And then Arizona, that's the big one. If they're now eligible for the tournament next year, and if they play well and they play up to their level that they have on their roster, they're another tournament team. And now you've started some momentum where 2 big years in a row, see where it goes.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports with us. I'll pivot a little bit to spring football. Mario Cristobal and the Ducks underway, looking for a quarterback, looking for growth. What are you hearing so far out of the early few days of spring ball?
Well, I thought it was very interesting that this time last year, before COVID hit, and everything was shut down. And then after and throughout the entire offseason, Cristobal was very adamant that Tyler Shuck was the starting quarterback. And this time around, he has not done that. He has said guys know where they sit on the depth chart, but he has not made it public who's taking first team reps. He's not made it public who is where on the depth chart. I thought that was very interesting to me that, you know, last year he was super adamant that Shuck was the guy. And this year it's Anthony Brown and a bunch of freshmen. And it feels like competition is raging right now at that quarterback spot. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I think along the offensive line that last year, you know, they rotated guys within the offensive line without anyone coming off. I mean, a tackle would be playing guard the next possession, a guard would be playing tackle the next possession. They'd be pulling guys off the field and putting in someone new. That was totally uncharacteristic of what they'd done previously with Cristobal in charge of the offensive line in 2017. And this weekend, Maribol said they're sticking with five until a sixth or seventh guy demands that they have to play. I thought it was very interesting that left tackle Kingsley Salmatia, a true freshman, is already with the second team. And Maribel quickly shot down the, you know, expectations that he could be much like Penei Sewell was as a freshman, but then also said that he fully expects him to be a guy that's a first-round draft pick in 3 or 4 years after his time at Oregon. And so I'm looking at this thinking, how long can George Moore, or if George Moore is currently at the ones at left tackle, how long does he hold him off? Because it's like a wave that's coming. Eventually it's going to crash and it's going to get to you. But just how long can you hold it off? I think Kingsley will eventually be a starter for Oregon. And then in the secondary, you know, we've already gotten some position changes. Brian Addison is now officially on the defensive side of the ball. He ended the year after playing most of the last two seasons at receiver. He ended last year with the corners. They've now moved him from corner to safety. And I think that's an intriguing one because he was a top 100 recruit overall, regardless of position, coming out of high school. He signed with Chip Kelly in UCLA to play safety, had some admission issues where he was cleared by the NCAA, just couldn't get into UCLA's, you know, their admissions process. And he got fed up of waiting and ended up signing with Oregon instead, enrolling like 2 days later and showing up a day before fall camp. And because of at that time in 2018, Oregon's safety unit had Ugo Amadi, who's in the NFL, Javon Holland, who's just completed his pro day and will probably be a first-round draft pick. They had Brady Breeze, they had Nick Pickett, and they had Steve Stevens. And safety was completely loaded. They didn't need anybody at safety. So they moved him to receiver, a position that was totally gutted from talent. He's played a little bit there, promising 2019 season. 2020 didn't play out like we all thought it would. And now he's back to safety where he originally was playing coming out of high school. He could be a guy that might, you know, over spring and into fall camp, slowly move up the depth chart as he gets used to playing defense again.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. You're the best, my friend. I appreciate you bringing your expertise to the show. Make sure you follow Matt on Twitter. Read him on 24/7 Sports. Matt, I appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks a lot.
There's Matt Prehm. Does a terrific job. Leave it here. Our Big Splash next. Every day on the show, we give you our Big Splash. It is the one thing you absolutely need to know.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
Must be the Big Splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Look, sports has felt a little different with no fans inside stadiums or limited fan attendance. It's also been difficult, I think, for athletes who have been mired in testing and antigen testing and sequestered in Indianapolis. But the NCAA tournament delivered over the weekend in a way that reminded us all that sports transcends a lot of things and is designed to help us escape. Gonzaga's last second buzzer beating overtime victory over UCLA punctuated what has been a sensational NCAA tournament. A tournament that was dominated in the men's bracket by the Pac-12 teams that advanced further and created a larger tournament share than any conference has gained in history. Pac-12 approaching about $40 million in shares in earnings over the next 6 years based on their performance in this tournament. It's not lost on me that the Pac-12 did this without one of its key tentpoles in men's basketball in recent years. No Arizona. Arizona opting out, self-imposing penalties, not participating in the Pac-12 tournament or March Madness. They were absent. If Sean Miller and Arizona ever gets out of the wiretap business, look out. Pac-12 conference could get some fortification. There again, the last Pac-12 team.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.